I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Today, I am super excited to have a friend on the podcast. Her name is Margot Tirado, and I've known Margot for at least 13 years because I've been married to Mike 13, and Margot did our premarital counseling. So we at least go back a little bit more than 13 years. So that's pretty exciting to me. Margot is an amazing woman. She's a psychotherapist with over 25 years of clinical experience, and she spent a boatload of hours, more than 40,000 hours, observing the human spirit. And she specializes in researching and developing gender-specific therapeutic insights that empower women to appreciate and honor the power of their voices. And that's some of what we're going to talk about today. We're going to go a variety of places. But before I officially welcome Margot, though I'm going to welcome her, I'm going to say welcome, Margot. To the podcast.
I'm so excited to be here with you your audience.
I am super excited to have you. I have heard you speak in a variety of settings. I've been one-on-one with you in the counseling office, as I mentioned, premarital counseling, and I've come to you periodically for a little personal tweak and tune-up, which has always been fantastic. But before we dive into the content, I've been trying to read more emails on the podcast. So I'm going to read an email from one of our Faith Conversations listeners really quickly and remind folks that I would love to hear from you. The email address is producer@anitalustria.com. producer@anitalustria.com. And this one is from Trish. Well, you'll kind of hear in what I read something that I referenced fairly recently, a little bit ago on the podcast. And she said, "Anita, I listened to the podcast and had to let you know that I really did enjoy the different style today. Always love hearing from Lori Neff, who was on with me recently. It's great that you're doing a book club." And I'll just break into Trish's email and say, if you listen in order to the podcast, then the next podcast after this is going to be the book club discussion. So you'll want to listen to that or put it off if you're still reading the book. Trish goes on to say, just because of her schedule, she probably won't fully get to participate in the book club, but she'll love taking in the great information and she'll add the book to her pile of want to reads, like I so often do. She just finished reading Sensible Shoes, which is a tremendous fiction book by Sharon Garlow Brown. I've been going through that in a small group and probably going to teach that in the fall here in the Sarasota area. Looking forward to that. And she went on to say, "I thought your monologue was great and that you should do that once in a while. And so I was just testing out the waters of doing a monologue. I enjoyed it and I will have it more planned out when I do decide to do it again." And she also said, "I'll try to think of some topics that I would like to hear and hear you discuss with some other people on the podcast, some of those issues that might challenge us." And then she went on to say, "Honestly, before you brought up Vicki Beeching, I was thinking of saying a topic that I would like to hear more about is coming out stories, especially of those who are in ministry as an occupation. I think all Christians have ministry as a vocation," she says. So she went on to say a boatload of other things that are helpful and interesting. And I'm here to say that so far I have thumbs up to talking to Vicki Beeching on the podcast about her story of coming out. And appreciate you all giving me feedback and letting me know, yes, you'd stay listening or no, you wouldn't. I can give you the count right now. All emailers have said, yes, I'd stay listening. And I think the church needs to hear these stories and learn how to open their arms in a loving way. And we've got to discuss this. We've got to talk through it. We've got to figure this out. So I'm not going to talk to Vicki until I read her book because I really want to know her story so that I can have a good conversation with her that would serve all of us well. So all that aside, now we're going to dive in with Margot Tirado. So Margot, I love putting it out there and hearing from folks on the podcast. It's a little different than live radio where you hear in the moment on Facebook. And so I've had to get used to all that and it's been kind of fun.
Yes. And I just love what you, the opportunity that you are providing, not just for men and women, but particularly for women, since that's where my heart and ministry has always been focused on. I love the idea of interviewing Vicki Beecham and her own coming out. And we all have our own coming out stories, right?
Yeah,
we've hidden something that we don't want, we don't feel as confident about, and we're more likely to be invisible or unseen. And I think all of us have our own coming out story about something we just need to talk about and quiet that voice of shame and be, you know, who we are meant to be.
I love that. That is a great point and puts it in a broader perspective too. I really appreciate that. Well, one of the things I want to talk to you about, because I think it would be instructive for all of us, and that's a little bit about your career and the trajectory of that career. You have, you started out in the counseling space, and it's not that you're not still there, but you've broadened out and you've zeroed in on a specific focus. And I would love for you to talk about what that is and how that happened, because I think it's all it all feeds into how we develop our own voices.
Mm-hmm. I think my story actually starts not in the counseling office, but in the little town of Española, New Mexico, where I grew up, in my own story of not really having a voice and knowing even what that meant. And I was thinking through this moment in my life that was a real game changer. I was 21 years old, and I was actually in Daytona Beach on a small summer mission pod project with Campus Crusade for Christ. I believe it's called Crew now.
Yes.
And there was a tradition where we were there for 12 weeks, and about 4 weeks in, the staff would ask one of the students to take over the role of leadership with the remaining 60 students. So it was a sunny summer day in Daytona, and I'm walking with the crew staff, Jonathan, and I just think we're out catching up, and he's mentoring me, and he turns to me and he says, "Hey, Margo, we're at that juncture where we're going to ask a student to be a leader, and we have chosen you. Will you do that?"
Wow.
I know. And I was really taken aback. So we chatted for a minute or two, and I turned to Jonathan and I said, "No, I think you've chosen the wrong person."
No way.
I did. I did. And he looked at me, we chatted about it, and he left me with six words that were game changers for me. Very simple. He said, "Margo, I want you to think about it. I want you to pray about it." And, you know, when I look back in my mid-50s at that 21-year-old girl who said no, I think looking back, I just had not really ever seen myself in a position of leadership. I think looking back, I had grown up under the weight of some pretty powerful, toxic messages that were both overtly and covertly communicated to me.
Absolutely. I'm shaking my head. You can't see it on the podcast, but I fully get that. And, you know, to the confidence to say yes doesn't come from, you know, out of nowhere. So it's really, in one way, I was like shocked that, because I know you today. So I was shocked. You know, of course, I'm thinking you were at 21 as you are today. Well, of course you weren't. None of us are. And so I love hearing this story. Whew. Okay.
As I look back and I reflect on this through the eyes of an adult who's done my own therapy and hard work, what I realize, honestly, is that I some of those toxic messages that I had inherited was that I felt I was less than my male counterpart. I felt that, especially as a woman of faith, that the messages that I had received was to be small and silent and subservient and on the sidelines. I mean, I had been given a number of messages about what it meant to be passive and submissive and quiet and tenderhearted and the power of obedience, but I had never, ever, ever been given the message as a woman of faith, as a woman of color, that I was also capable and equipped to be a leader. Mm. And so I had to go into this like, where's this internal conflict coming from?
Yeah. Wow. And of course, I want to know, and maybe you're going to tell us, if when you thought about it and prayed about it, if your answer changed. I'm hearing where, you know, that we do internalize some of these messages. I mean, we internalize all kinds of messages as we grow up. Some indeed are toxic, and we don't even know it. We live with the outworking of what those messages have done internally to us by saying no to a great opportunity or not having that confidence built up in us. And, you know, it takes a while to figure out what those messages are and then how we might shift that within us. And so, yeah.
And I think the internal shift is recognizing these emotional habits and spiritual habits that form how we think and then how we express ourselves in the outer world. And if we can identify, as I had to eventually identify, what were those emotional habits? What were those belief systems? What were those things that caused me to say no?
Exactly. Well, and I'll let people know too, you're writing about this. You're in the process of putting a book out specifically on all of this stuff that we're talking about today. Because I think people might be very interested to know that. And I'll post links in the show notes and give folks information.
Yes, the name of the book is The 10 Emotional Habits of Empowered Women.
Nice. Love it. And here, I want to say this to the male listeners listening today. A couple of things. This is valuable information for the women in your lives. Please recommend the podcast to them. This might really be a game changer for them. Number two, there will be crossover and transcendent thoughts given today that you will also be able to glean something from. I have no doubt about that as well. But the primary audience that Margot, you know, speaks to and will be speaking to is women, and which is interesting, Margot, because that's where I came from. My audience has broadened out a little bit, but probably my deepest heart is still for women. So I'll just put that out there too.
Yeah, and I think we all can relate, most women can relate to that experience, that experience of it's not just not feeling confident, it's an inability or capacity to not own a posture of influence or power or authority. And I think when I even bring that up often with women, you could visually see them wince at the idea of owning a posture of power or influence and authority. And I think that's some of the internal conflict that I was wrestling with as a young girl. That's some of the conflict I invite women to just open up the dialogue about and do a self-check about whether or not that emotional tension is necessary.
Oh, that's interesting. Whether that emotional tension is necessary. I look back at my life, and I have often, I might have even said this to you at some point, I picture myself curled up in a ball in the corner of a room and slowly unfurling and my spine becoming erect and straight and standing up tall over the course of years. And I guess I look at that and I think, but I want to hear what you say about this. I think that tension was important. I mean, I had to go through that process. I would like to have come out of the womb and had all messages that fed into me that led me to be this strong woman with a real sense of what my voice was. But I think the real process needed to happen. Is that true? It's the way it worked for me, but I feel like we gain from that also.
Yes, absolutely. I think that all of those moments that cultivate a sense of feeling smaller and significant can all be redeemed and part of a new narrative as you move forward. I've always been drawn to art that is both ugly and beautiful, because to me, the most beautiful art holds that tension. And I think that same narrative can happen in our own lives. You know, the things that we would consider to be ugly, we can translate those into beautiful. And there's a number of ways that women can cultivate that. But you have to own both.
What I want to know is, how long has this process been in your own life? You know, because this stuff doesn't happen overnight, and sometimes we are not even aware of why we respond the way we do, why our voice isn't yet formed, why, and we can beat ourselves up about that as well, but it's something that does seem to take time. And I'm curious, because you've sort of shifted the trajectory of your own career over time, and I'm wondering if that's a part of this, has been a part of that process for you.
Absolutely. My counseling and speaking it works in tandem with my own life. And it's a reflection of that. And if I can't be doing that, then I can't support and encourage and minister to other women. And one thing that I have also begun to learn myself is which is interesting coming from a therapist who's always looking at the past and history, that is part of the process. However, I also think that we have a lot more power within ourselves if we can identify these old emotional habits and change them, exchange them for some new emotional habits. We have more opportunity and a power and ability to do that. And that is not contingent on anything in the outside world. That is not contingent on anything external. Ooh. That is contingent on an internal shift. And we have complete control over that, no matter what our narratives are.
That's interesting. Isn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's a lot more empowering. I think that part of my process was looking how the outside world and my culture and my faith and growing up as a woman of a Latina within the Latina culture in an environment where I'm a minority, it's important to understand how those things influenced me, but that absolutely does not have anything to do with my ability to move into a posture of being empowered. They're completely separate processes.
Okay, I'm taking that in. I think that's very interesting. I don't know if this is the next question, but this is a question that's coming to me. And so if I'm leaping over something, you know, just take us back. But the question that it sort of begs in me is, how do we get there? If indeed that's the case, you know, that this is internal. We have that choice. I think we still need to have maybe people around us that kind of help move us that direction, or we need some external information that maybe we didn't know about, or some kind of inciting incident. Something's got to take place that starts moving us that direction, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it can be a number of things. Part of what I really want to provide is a rubric, so to speak, of helping people, women in particular, although many men relate to these, but I think as women, these are struggles that I would call much more common to the feminine experience. And they're really specific emotional habits. So for example, here's a really good one. I feel guilty when I rock the boat. I feel like I've done something wrong. I feel like I'm bad. I feel like I second guess myself. I'm worried about who I've offended. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is when there's something that we feel really strongly about, maybe a value that we have been called to, and we create a ruckus around it, there's that tension, because women equate that with feeling guilty, like as if they've done something wrong. Right. And so so the new habit would be really learning the art of making a good ruckus.
Huh. like it's something that is desired that we do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you think about it, like I put it on a scale. Is this something that I value enough to create tension around respectfully, with articulation, with thought, without blaming, but is it something that I value enough to allow the experience of that tension And I don't like tension. I don't know about you. Most people don't.
Don't love it. No.
Yeah, but am I willing to deal with the tension because it's something I value? Then you define that as a good ruckus.
Nice. Okay.
Where men don't really avoid conflict, so to speak, they don't feel guilty if they've put dust in the air.
Right. They might not like conflict, but they don't have the guilt feelings that women might carry forward. That's interesting to me. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So I feel guilty when I rock the boat. So learning the art of creating a good ruckus. And so that means figuring out if what I'm about to raise is worth raising. And if it is, then raise it well and high and fully. Mm-hmm.
I think that within each of us, there's something that the Lord has put in our hearts from our story, from our history, from the people that we love, from the ministries that we value. And I think those are values that have been given to us in tandem with the Holy Spirit. And for each of us, they're different.
Yes.
I think earlier today you were talking about the idea of having Vicki Beecham.
Yes.
And part of what you were asking yourself or mm-hmm. sensing was, how much of a ruckus am I going to make?
That's true, right? Yes.
How much of a ruckus am I going to make? Is this something I value enough to rock the boat? Mm. Can I do that without feeling too guilty? And then it works in tandem with another emotional habit, which is investing in being likable.
Yes.
Versus, right? It kind of works with working like rocking the boat, but it's, am I going to invest in being likable, or am I going to invest in kind of owning what I believe and know at the core of what I believe and who I am at the core?
Yeah, that desire that I have to challenge people to think. And my desire isn't even for people to come down and make a decision on what they feel is right. It's to have the conversation. Please, let's be talking about this as a church. Let's mm-hmm. love people, and let's not be the Holy Spirit. Let's, you know, mm-hmm. so, but this all gets very tricky and muddied. And as you can hear, Margo, just what you said, I want to still be liked, even mm-hmm. if I raise this, but I feel strong enough, because for me, this is like a justice issue, which that's one mm. of the things that's high on my list are, you know, people who are marginalized. What's the reason why this, what do we need to talk about and look at, et cetera. So, wow, you kind of got me going.
Yeah. And yeah. So justice is something, Anita, that you value.
Yes.
And so if you can identify, okay, I think it's worth making a little bit of a ruckus about, and a good ruckus. I don't just say a ruckus, a good ruckus.
Good.
And your definition of a good ruckus is, I want to cultivate a conversation with people in the spirit of mutual respect, regardless of where any existing tension may rise. And that you believe that through that conversation, you are creating a just outcome.
That's good.
Now, there might have been a number of other pitches, so to speak, of people that you could have interviewed, and you might have decided, I don't know if I'm really ready to go up to bat for that. But once you know what you value, and you can name that, and you understand, okay, the tension that I'm creating is, it weighs more than the discomfort that I will experience of the tension or the rocket, the ruckus. And so now you've moved from an old emotional habit, right? Yep. I feel guilty when I rock the boat, to a new emotional habit, which is learning the art of making a good ruckus.
And I'll even go so far as to say, in my past, I've gotten in trouble for rocking the boat. So I think that's where this also comes from. It's not just feeling guilty, mm-hmm. but some of us have been attempted to be silenced for rocking the boat or getting in trouble for it.
Yes. Silence is not our friend.
No, correct.
Silence will keep us in a posture of feeling insignificant, unheard, invisible. And I think as women, both culturally and within the church, we have been given, I believe, way too many messages about being silent and visible and submissive and kind. And not that those spiritual characters are not of value, but we need to weigh them with other attributes that the Lord is calling all of us, both men and women, to develop.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. That's a really good one. I'm going to kind of chew on that one for a little while. where are you going to take us next?
Let's see. Another emotional habit, and again, this comes back to my story with crew. The old emotional habit is, I am afraid to fail.
Okay. Yeah.
And I am in that season of my life, I had not cultivated the skills yet to know how to fail, to be okay with that, to work through the internal dialogue that is triggered when one fails. And in order for people to move into positions of impact and influence and leadership, we have to be willing to embrace failure. And I think in that moment, some of it was the internal dialogue, but looking back, it was also, I can't do this.
Sure.
And if I do this, if I fail, you know, there's all this internal dialogue. And so the new emotional habit that I continue to work on is becoming a risk-taking woman.
Ooh.
AKA a risky woman.
I love that. And I will say, I'm going to add this in. I'm curious. I also think, and I'm taking notes, so I got to write this. Okay. But I also think leadership, you know, which you have grown into that. You are a leader. I get that and see that. So I love these habits. But I think of leadership back then in your life and in all of our lives, leadership also has an opportunity to speak messages that aid us moving into these spaces. You know, if someone had come along and really preached well and multiple times that, hey, it's okay to fail, in fact, that's how we learn, maybe some of us wouldn't be so afraid to fail.
Absolutely. So when I think about leadership, I think it's owning the importance of your leadership, but it's also looking for something greater than yourself. That's what leader is for me. And so when I think about do I want to lead towards something that is greater than myself? For myself, it's about empowering the extraordinary power of the feminine soul. And empowering women with these practices that will move them into more empowering postures. That's what encourages me to move into a posture of leadership. Mm. For me, it's looking at something that's greater than myself.
I love that. Becoming so old emotional habit, afraid to fail. New emotional habit, becoming a risky woman.
Yes.
Becoming a risky woman. I don't know if you have any story to attach to that. I'd love to hear that.
You know, okay. So when I first started playing with this, it actually showed up. Excuse me, I'm taking a sip of water.
Yep.
It showed up in a flamenco class.
Oh,
that's
its own story. I want to hear that.
No, I don't know what I was thinking. I was studying flamenco, pardon me, and I was always aware at the moment that I stepped on stage that my knees were shaking and my heart was beating, and I was beyond terrified, and really did not express how uncomfortable the experience of being in front of others caused, what that created in me. And that's pretty typical. I think it was more so for me because I grew up feeling a bit more shy and unconfident and insecure. So when I moved into flamenco, which was in my early 40s, every time I had to get on the stage and practice in front of my peers, even if I knew the content, I couldn't dance because I was overcome by fear. So my instructor, Wendy Clinard, invited me to do a solo dance. And I looked at her like, you gone crazy. That's not going to happen. But as I thought about it, I thought, you know, this would be a great opportunity for me to use that in tandem with what I was working with inside of me. And it would be a beautiful way. I think arts and creative arts are a beautiful way to find out where our narrative shows up.
Yes.
And how through art, in this case, flamenco, can help us cultivate ourselves as women and then move that into other aspects of ministry and the counseling office. So eventually I did do a solo dance. And
I'm nervous, and this is in your past. I'm like, this has already happened, and I'm nervous about it. So you did the solo dance. Okay, keep going.
It was, and flamenco is so difficult that you don't start in beginner class. Oh. You actually start in beginner class.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I don't know what I was thinking, because I was still in beginner class. And I'm a perfectionist, and I want things to be perfect before I get in front of people, because I don't want to fail. And I think part of what I now realize looking back was, when I look at the video, I cringe, because I think, why did you get up on stage? You were 9 months, 12 months into this. But it was a moment for me when I worked through some of those internal conflicts. So what if I fail?
Right.
So what if it's not perfect? So what? And it was a really interesting moment for me to be willing to risk in order to succeed, to look at the fear that I had. What will people think? What if I fail? What if I freeze? And ultimately, if I got up there and I took 5 steps and froze and walked off the stage, it was okay.
Yes.
I had to embrace that there was a different personal goal that I was moving towards.
I have a question in the midst of your response here. Why is it easier for us to encourage and be confident for someone else, to encourage them to become a risky woman, but not ourselves? It's just easier to move someone else that direction or encourage them that way.
It's so true.
Yeah.
I think because we can see the value of that person and the importance of what they have to bring to their world of influence, and we're not connected to all the fear.
Yeah, there you go. I guess
that's connected.
Because
there's
sense.
Fear and there's fear and discomfort in being seen,
yes.
In being visible, in being in the front and moving from a posture of being small to being invisible. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, as I was encouraging other women and continue to encourage myself, move into those positions, those opportunities. It can be a flamenco stage. It could be in a conversation. It could be in a book club. It could be any moment of your life. Just practice the power of moving from being unheard to heard, from feeling small to invisible. That will shape your feminine experience. It's, you know, I think moving in these habits, these emotional habits, they're little steps, and then another little step, and then another little step. And before we know it, we've continued to cultivate these habits.
That's really interesting. I'm in the process of researching organizations here in Sarasota, because I want to do some volunteer work one afternoon a week. And that's a new venture for me, and it feels really risky. But everything that you just said, I thought, yes, 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 I need to keep moving down this path. Yeah, that's really interesting to kind of embody this. And I don't know. Yeah, and I can't even say what I'm afraid of, except probably afraid to fail. I don't even know what failure looks like, but that's kind of all wrapped up in it. I'm sure of it. So it's really interesting.
Yeah, and I think that as women, we are much more prone to be aware of what other people think about what we do. And if you're sitting around with a group of men and you ask them the same question or ask if they identify with that feeling, they kind of give you the side eye. And I love the awareness of that. It reminds me that, okay, so that's something that as a woman might be part of not just my own feminine experience, but our experience as women. Yeah. Let's define that and let's see how that shows up in keeping us from moving into opportunities that we are being called to participate in.
That's good.
We can cultivate these habits. I know I've spent 40 plus years trying to cultivate them in my life and provide them to other women. And I'm still learning as I grow in my own personal evolution. And I have the incredible honor of working with amazing women and being privy to their story and how their story is similar to many women that I love and work with. And
which I think is interesting too, just in that last line, you know, that their story is similar. I think we all think we're the only one. We're alone. And really, our stories so often have similar threads running through, and the realization that we're not alone, we're in this together. I think all of that is very important to realize and to recognize. Also, I wanted to ask you, you know, you talked about flamenco dancing, and I remember I was already down here in Sarasota. Mike and I had made the move from Chicago to Sarasota, so I was not in Chicago to enjoy this, but I remember that you did a TEDx talk, which is huge, and somebody was there, a mutual friend of ours, and they told me that you started with flamenco at the beginning of this.
I did, because yes, the TEDx talk, let me set the background. The TEDx talk was how to quiet a shame-producing toxic voice.
Nice. Okay.
And so in talking with the audience about what does that mean, like I told them a story about a moment in my own life where a toxic voice showed up. And I'll tell it again. It was in class, and there was a practice in the flamenco, in my flamenco class. And flamenco, for those who don't know, is a traditional Spanish dance where there's some pretty aggressive footwork that happens, and you create rhythms that are included in the dance. So we had just finished dance practicing for about 30 minutes. And my instructor, Wendy, then invited each of us to individually get up on the stage and dance what we had just learned in front of our peers. And her intention for doing this was to make sure we understood what we had been learning. And I hated this practice. I knew it was coming. I always, you know, just, I always, was always very frustrating for me, caused a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. So my time came up to dance. And I tried it, and it was terrible. She said, "No, Margo, do it again." So I did it. And I still did not get the dance, the footwork, and she had me repeat it and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it. And I was getting incredibly frustrated. And somewhere in that process, I nailed the footwork. I mean, it was glorious. Oh. It was like, bam. And Wendy looked at me and said, "No, do it again, do it again." And so this went on for what was about 10 or 15 minutes. And at a certain point in this process, I looked at Wendy, I took a deep breath, and I heard what Wendy was actually saying to me. She was saying, "Margo, bailar sin vergüenza, bailar sin vergüenza." That means, "Margo, I want you to dance without shame. Dance without shame." She didn't care if I had the footwork right.
Oh,
that's shame
beautiful.
Was all over my face and my body. And in flamenco, we have this term called duende, which I love. Duende is the expression of your spirit. It's the expression of who you are created to be at the core. Wow. And you can have all the footwork right, but if you have not possessed your duende, you cannot be a flamenco dancer. And she would not let me stop until I stopped dancing with shame. Wow. And somebody could have walked in the room and hit me with a 2x4, and I would not have been more impacted. Again, those moments, that was a game changer in my life. This feeling of shame and not feeling good enough, feeling small, feeling insignificant, this relentless feeling of unworthiness, when you have that inside of you, that shows up everywhere. Mm. And it was showing up in my flamenco class. And it was this beautiful art form that I'm obsessed with and continue to study to this day that allowed me to see how that was showing up in my life.
I love it. I love it. And I mean, already just in our short time together, these two potent illustrations from flamenco, I'd still be studying it too. That's amazing. And then you went on, so you did this at the beginning of your TEDx talk, and then you went on to use that as this great illustration and continue talking, which I love. I mean, there's a boatload, there's so much more that we can talk about today, but what's another nugget, maybe another emotional habit that would be great to talk about and leave us with today?
This will be a whole entire podcast, but I'll put a little out there for people to think about.
Wet our appetites for more. Good.
Just wet your appetite.
Love it.
So an old emotional habit, right? An emotional habit that we want to pay attention to is having a high tolerance for crap. In the clinical world, we call it codependency.
Is that what you call it? Okay.
But you know, it's and so the new habit is really understanding how those patterns show up in your life, in your beliefs, in your relationships with others, and really noticing how we can kind of cloak those patterns in spiritual principles, and the difference between recognizing kind of these codependent patterns versus other characters and qualities that we all want to inhabit.
So the old emotional habit, having a high tolerance for crap, aka codependency, what's the new habit that replaces that, or that we can get flowing through our minds?
Mm-hmm. I think the new habit is really understanding what relationships in your life or patterns that are unhealthy and hurtful that you need to give yourself permission to rewrite, revisit, and perhaps let go of. I think as women, we are incredibly loyal and patient and kind. And again, those are patterns that we need to cultivate. I certainly want to continue to cultivate those in my life, but there's a tipping point where it's no longer loyalty and patience. It's something unhealthy and it's going to keep you from being empowered.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Somebody was talking with me just this week, and she was describing a relationship and struggling to discern. And I said, well, you really are discerning. you're discerning what to do apart from me saying anything, because it's troubling you. And this is the behavior that's going on, or this is what's happening. And I used this phrase. I said, you know, some relationships are for a time and some relationships are for all time. But not all relationships are for all time. And, you know, and some of that happens when we move and we're no longer in proximity. Some of those relationships that were maybe not as deep and wide, And some of those relationships that are not for all time happen because there is change, because there is unhealth, and one of the members of the twosome become healthy, right? And and therefore, it's, you know, we've got to revisit and maybe let go of. And I think it's interesting, but don't, well, you said, I think women are often very loyal. I think guilt can kind of come into that boat as well. And, you know, we just think, well, we can't let go of this. But there's a period, there's a time where we do have to look at our own personal health. Isn't that true?
Yes. And I think, you know, when I think about how this has resonated and shown up in my own life, the relationships that are hardest for me to revise are with people who I really love, especially family members, where there's tension between the cultural belief, my cultural belief of being very family oriented and loyal. And when that then there's tension around that and being in partnership with somebody who's really being hurtful. And harsh. And again, these are not black and white habits. It's not either or. It's really paying attention to with some of these old habits, knowing them, defining them, knowing what they look like, and then moving into the process of making sure that this balance, the scale is a little more balanced.
You know what I like about what you just said? You said these are not black and white habits. Well, that's what we want them to be. And I would say it makes me look back in life. When we were a child, we thought as a child. And when we were a child, most things were black and white. But the older that we get, and this is in our emotional life, our spiritual life, and our physical life, I would even say, things are less black and white. I loved the Peter Enns book, Addicted to Certainty. I think that's what it was. You know, it's not, there's so much more gray as we move forward. And I think the beauty of that, if you're a person of faith, is that we are entrusted. We always talk about trusting God. God entrusts us with good minds and good, you know, if we have chosen to attach ourselves and, you know, decided to grow and change and, you know, move forward, there's a trust that he also puts in us that we can discern and decipher, and that it doesn't have to all be black and white, because we are growing and figuring this out along the way.
Yes. And for me, all roads lead back to flamenco.
I love that.
So I'm going to use another flamenco analogy that has been really helpful for me. Sometimes I'll go in class and my instructor, Wendy, will go, here's what we're going to do. And she does it with such speed and beauty and power and tension. And then she'll say, okay, here we go. And she'll break it down into small steps. And I'll get really overwhelmed because the speed of her dance and the way she has cultivated this, I don't even know where to begin. And at one point, I think she saw the look on my face, and she turned to me and she said, Margo, they're just steps. And little by little, she broke it down into little steps. And then I practiced those little steps, and then she added more, and then she picked up the speed, and then she continued to add to that. And I know in my own growth as a woman, I'm always waiting for that moment when I'm going to arrive. And it's kind of like flamenco, just before you go on stage, all the way up to the last minute, you're constantly, there's always one more thing you can do to bring the dance and the expression of it. And I think the same is true in my own life, and I think in the lives of women. I didn't really grow up with a cultural or spiritual template for what an empowered woman looked like.
Yeah.
I'm in the process of understanding what that looks like.
Yeah.
And part of my life work is breaking that down into small, measurable steps, so that we as women can learn that one step at a time.
Oh, that's a great illustration. Well, and that's what makes me grateful that you're writing. And, you know, and of course I want to know, people are going to be asking me, when is your book available?
I hope to have it out and published by February 2019. That's the goal.
Okay. Because I know people are going to ask, and I want to read more. I love these illustrations, and I hope they're going to make their way into the book if they haven't already. The flamenco stuff is just killer. I mean, those are fantastic illustrations, and just helps break things down in a way to more easily understand some of these concepts. I love it. Margot, you're brilliant, and just helping, I think, a lot of people and women especially to move forward and into their true voice and full voice. I'll say that. You certainly have helped me through the years, and it's just a lot of fun to be able to talk with you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Anita. Thank you for inviting me to be a guest on your show and letting me express my duende, my voice, my particular view on this dance of life, and for the work you're doing in cultivating powerful and important conversations for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you. And to everyone else, I say keep the conversation going.